Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus. Have accessed entry 398.RO1313, certificate number 32683, the Eggnog Riot.
It's the holiday season.
Time to riot.
Famously, all those Christmas songs about how you riot on Christmas.
I don't like eggnog. If you were going to like bury the lead and get, you know, try and tease that out of me, I'm just going to start the episode by saying I am not an eggnog-er.
Are you going to conscientiously object doing this episode?
No, I mean, I'm capable of talking about a lot of things I disagree with on this show.
Last week we did slavery.
I'm not.
This week we're doing eggnog. We
disagree with both things.
We're doing all the abominations.
I would not say they were equivalent.
I hope
slavery
I
and eggnog.
I hope I didn't imply that.
No, but I.
Which do you think is worse?
For civilization?
Just for the record.
Or for me personally.
Which has affected your life more?
I mean, I have to confront eggnog more often than directly confront slavery, but I think I confront the effects of slavery.
It's true, boy. Don't
more
we
all? Often than the effects of eggnog.
But don't we do it less than other people with less privilege than us? Yes, we confront it less than I do.
Now I'm confused. I've lost my...
It would be a bummer if...
Lost solid ground.
Like for a month of every year, you go to your dairy case and there's slavery in there.
That'd be bad. Or it's connected somehow to eggnog where it's like, are you sure you want this eggnog? Have you thought about your complicity in the American history?
What is it about slavery? Eggnog you dislike? I'm pretty strongly pro-eggnog.
You are?
Yeah.
It's a nog,
You don't enjoy any of the nogs?
I don't want a nog.
What and if it was called something else?
I don't want...
And it didn't have the connection with kind of a weird sweater-wearing version of American holidays.
Well, I'm not even aware of the connections of it so much as I don't want a nog, and I definitely don't want one made of eggs. I want a Julius, and I want it made of orange.
So you're saying you're okay with certain kinds of frothy drink?
Mm-hmm. I'll have an orange Julius all day.
You're not anti-froth.
Basically, I'd eat any kind of Julius. You could even make me an egg Julius, and I probably, it's not the eggs I'm against, because they used to put eggs in orange Julius. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. Egg white, like powdered egg white.
No,
stuff.
No.
They would crack an egg in
when
it?
When I was a kid at the mall, they would crack a live egg into your orange Julius, and they did it with a big flourish, like, because it was a menu add-on. You'd say, oh, I want an egg in it. And then he started using egg powder because I'm sure somebody got salmonella or somebody.
Well, yeah,
somebody worried about salmonella.
You can't be cracking raw eggs, but you know it's true. Like I'm still going to eat my chocolate chip cookie dough, even knowing that it ups my salmonella odds.
Last
by
year,
1/100,000th of a percent.
If you took all the chocolate chip cookie dough I ate during the pandemic, it would probably fill a wine cask.
It would make a cookie the size of blank. Basketball court,
West Virginia. I'm not averse to egg. It's just the nog, I guess. I don't.
But
like.
There is no nog. Nog is just a 17th century English word meaning like some kind of East Anglian beer.
Yeah.
How it got connected to our eggy drink is a little confusing.
I don't want East Anglian anything. And I don't want egg in my nog.
What if it wasn't called nog? What if it was just a
like, what is it, the spicing? Do you not want nutmeg in your drink? Do you not like the gooey texture of an eggy drink? You said you're pro Julius.
Listen to yourself. Do you not want nutmeg, gooey nutmeg in your egg drink?
Well, I'm saying,
what are these words?
There's much to potentially object to here for the narrow-minded. which is your particular beef?
Sometimes it's all of the above, right? I don't mind beef, but I wouldn't want beef
nog
in my nog. Exactly. Like, I don't mind egg. I don't mind, I mean, nutmeg. What's a good use of nutmeg that's not nog? What else do you put nutmeg in? I mean, you can get high on it.
Malcolm X got high off it.
Yeah, if you snort it.
I think sometimes, like, certain kinds of South and Southeast Asian foods actually use it as part of the spice mix.
See, there you go. I'm in favor of that. I'm in favor of all...
Nutmeg on my lamb.
Southeast Asian foods.
But not on my... You're so open-minded.
Yeah, but not open-minded about nog.
But, you like, sweet spiced things, not for you? Would you eat a spiced cookie? If it tasted kind of clovey or cinnamony?
No.
Ah, interesting. So it's not, maybe not, and it's kind of rummy. I mean, the thing about eggnog that tastes distinctive, especially to like maybe a kid who doesn't eat a lot of rum extract, is even if it's not alcoholic.
It tastes like booze.
Yeah, it's got kind of that boozy taste.
We had a Christmas party last year and people came. You came. Did you come? Maybe not. It was pretty boozy. I definitely was like, I'm at a Christmas party that I'm a co-host of and everybody's on booze.
Did you intentionally not invite us because you thought it was too debauched?
I'm never sure whether you guys celebrate Christmas or not, frankly. I can't keep all the religious doctrines straight sometimes. I'm like, which ones are celebrating
Christmas? We celebrate so much Christmas.
You go to the doctor too, right?
I get blood transfusions. Okay. I say the Pledge of Allegiance during my blood transfusion.
You know, I need a cheat sheet on the wall.
I eat pork.
Okay. All right, I'm starting to zero in on it now. No, I don't remember. You guys were out of town. You were in England.
If it was between Christmas and New Year's, we probably were out of town. Yeah. If it was before Christmas.
See, that's what it was.
We might have been
around. Must have been. Anyway, what I was surprised at two things at this Christmas party. One, multiple people brought trays of deviled eggs. Not just one. Like, my co-host made deviled eggs and then other people also brought deviled eggs.
And were you happy? Like, this is an egg that has not been put into nog form.
I do not want a deviled egg.
I don't like deviled eggs.
No, I don't want them under any circumstances. Oh. I do not want them on a farm. I do not want them on my arm.
But I've had deviled eggs with smoked salmon mixed into the egg, and suddenly I was for it.
Okay.
Because it didn't just taste like egg salad goop.
Yeah, you're a fancy person, though. So salmon...
Egg. It's not that fancy.
I would just
go to Safeway and buy $5 worth of lox and put it in your deviled eggs.
But not only that. So at one point, the table had deviled eggs like it was a mosaic, like the floor of a Roman villa.
Imagine walking in a Roman villa where deviled eggs cover the floor. You're walking through there like Indiana Jones.
I hate deviled eggs. But not only that, but they all were consumed. I had no idea that deviled eggs were like such a hit that you could have a Christmas party and like 60 deviled eggs would get eaten in the course of a night.
Deviled eggs must have been having a moment.
Maybe.
I can think of a couple pretty high-end Seattle restaurants, including one at which I just canceled a reservation so I could go to dinner with you.
That's right.
By the way.
That's right.
That place has upscale smoked oyster deviled eggs.
Oh my God.
And some other salmon roe deviled eggs.
Our last episode was about the decline and fall of the United States, and then here it is. Somebody
writ large.
Somebody online the other day said that you and I were too high class. Not too T-O-O high class, but we were T-W-O, too high class dudes.
Like in a bad way? Is this pejorative? Like,
well, I couldn't tell.
Look at these sheltered dopes.
I'm making a real concerted effort not to reply to people online.
Yeah.
But it was very hard for me not to say, what is your sense of class in America that you think Ken and I are high class? Because we're right down the middle in terms of class.
We're higher class than me. Basic as hell.
Yeah, we're pretty basic.
Well, do you have holiday? Oh, sorry.
Oh, but the other thing was how noggy the party was and how boozy noggy it was. I don't want a nog in the first place, let alone people like duke the booze in the nog.
Well, here's a defense of religion Secular America largely sees Christmas in the same way that it sees air travel, commercial air travel, which is as an excuse to drink at occasions and times of day when really one perhaps should not be. So
just before
if the birth of our Lord is just an excuse to
get wasted,
yeah, on a lot of weird sherries and rums that would not be acceptable in November.
Just before we started this episode, I got a text message from a guy that I know he's my age. He's a rock musician. He's just recently sober. And, you know, in that region of like, I'm sober. And if you're long time sober, you're like, okay, good, careful.
Tell me in a...
Like, you don't buy a mortgage on it. Like, you got, every day is a new day, right? And he just sent me this text at 11:30 in the morning that's like, reads like a slam poem. Like, shoobity-doo-wop, mustard and sauerkraut, scabbity-doo, da-da-da. And I'm like, so I wrote him back and I was like, I hope you're not drunk. And now I'm realizing that this really is America. His excuse at being for being drunk at 11:30 in the morning is that he's trying to get sober.
Do you have sponsor duties here that you need to?
No.
Okay.
No. My sponsorship is always real hands off. It's like, come to me when you're ready.
But the connection between the holidays and alcohol, you know, predates Christianity. Probably. I mean, as a pagan ceremony, the solstice was a time when. It was a time to make light and merriment in the darkest time of the year. And then in particular in the Middle Ages, it was the time when if you were a serf, which you probably were,
sure,
the only time your lord would let you share something from his cellars or some gross new thing he had just cooked up and added to the wassail.
Like our middle-class ancestors.
Yep.
Who were just serfs like everyone else.
Like there was no middle class.
Right.
You had coal miners and I had peat farmers and...
Yeah. And we were just hoping that our...
That was almost as good as it got.
Lords would give us a little bit of nog.
2 days a year, your lords would nog you up. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, do you have... But, you know, and that tradition continues. The time of Christmas is a time of abundance, food and drink, you know, the... Oh, Ebenezer Scrooge, I've just appeared in your bedroom covered in pumpkins. You know, this seems Christmassy to us still. Look, a big ham.
Yes.
Do you have holiday food and drink traditions you are in favor of, if eggnog is not one of them?
Well, there is one.
Deviled eggs.
No, there is one, which is that at some point in my childhood, my mother made Welsh rarebit.
Oh, you've talked about this. That's right.
And connected it to Christmas for me in a way that I didn't believe you could. I couldn't fathom that you could eat Welsh rarebit any other time but Christmas morning.
Did you know that other families did not eat this toasty cheese thing on Christmas morning?
I'm not sure I've ever met another family that eats Welsh rarebit in any circumstances.
Or ever.
I mean, I've never. It's not a thing where I've ever been invited over and it's like, we're having Welsh rarebit.
Well, I come from the 20th century and my mom would often put pieces of white bread in the broiler with a Kraft single on top of them and then...
But that's a grilled cheese sandwich.
Open face, though.
Oh, okay. Well,
I mean, Welsh rarebit should have better cheese for sure.
Yeah.
What else does it... Are there pickles?
No, but my mom... made an addition to Welsh rarebit, or, you know, modified it because it's on biscuits and then it's got thinly sliced ham and then that's covered.
I feel like your mom has just invented Benedict. Basically.
Yeah, it's basically a Benedict except, well, yeah, right. It's
biscuits got instead of English muffins.
And cheese sauce instead of béarnaise.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, it's a Christmas morning thing and I'd never eat it at any other time of the year. I'm perfectly capable of making it now. I make it at Christmas time for the family.
Easy to make.
It has turned into my thing, but I would never make it in September. My mind couldn't even get around it. It would be like drinking eggnog in July.
Which was always my dream as a kid. As an eggnog-loving kid, I was like, boy, could we freeze it? it's so tantalizing. The supermarkets are full of it from November to... January 3rd.
But you can make it yourself,
does it all
right?
Go?
Isn't it just milk and egg and nutmeg? What's in it? Yeah. I honestly have no idea what's in eggnog. I'm outing myself now.
I mean, I bet at home it would be you could probably make something that tasted better, but not to my child's palate because it wouldn't have all the carrageenan and corn syrup that went into the grocery case eggnog, right?
Well, I don't want to spoil your show here, but I'm going to figure out what is in eggnog right now.
I'm going to read an eggnog recipe.
Oh, you're going to do that. Okay. All right. Well, then.
Well, this would be an old-timey one. No. Go ahead. Do your thing. I was, I texted my family this morning. That's the only time they'll allow me to communicate with them.
In the morning? Before they're fully awake?
By text.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I said time when I meant means. We'll fix that in the editing. And I said, do we have family holiday season food traditions? Why can't I think of any? And my kid says, not really. And then I feel like our holiday food is the same as everyone else.
Oh, my mom makes fudge. Killer fudge. Like better than you can buy anywhere.
In advance of the holidays? Does she give it out on doorsteps?
Nope. We used to go around. Oh, God, I used to have a plaid suit. When I first got my driver's license, 16 years old, I had a plaid three-piece suit, as every 16-year-old does. And I had my new car, my new driver's license, and I went around the neighborhood and took little packages of fudge, homemade fudge and chocolate chip cookies to all the neighbors, like ring the doorbell, standing there like, ding dong, hi, in my suit.
And that's so you to want to be the one standing there having a little adult conversation.
Oh, and I wasn't there to see the kids. I was there to be like, Merry Christmas from the Rodericks. My mom wanted nothing to do with it, but she would make the stuff for me.
We did it in secrecy with our kids. Our kids used to love to steal up to the porches and leave the secret candy or cookies and then hit the doorbell and run for it because, you know, we don't allow Ding Dong Dash in other forms.
No. I mean, I'm sure that I was really interested. Like, oh, are you watching the McNeil-Lehrer report? Can I come in?
How's the golf game, Mr. Sanders?
But we do. And my mom, for a long time, put fudge in the Advent. We had little Advent calendars that hung down with a piece of fudge for every day. And now she just brings everybody a pound of fudge in a Tupperware. And says, my work here is done.
Your mom's all business.
She is. So this says here that an eggnog is...
it's not a secret. It's going to be milk, cream, egg, spices, and either rum extract or actual spirits.
But it's described here as a milk punch.
You're a milk punch.
Milk punch.
Is that why you don't want it?
Gross.
Like, what am I? Like a...
Milk punch.
Like, you'd have to be like really into weird Japanese culture.
Yeah.
The only things you can buy in a Japanese 7-Eleven are lozenges, including
egg milk punch. Like, sign me up.
Wait, but what's wrong with it? It's not, like, even warm milk makes me a little ew, but it's just a cold, sweetened milk. It's not that different from chocolate milk.
Here's what you're looking for. A milkshake.
That's correct. And every
step you go away from a milkshake and toward...
That's away from God's life.
It really is. Like, what are you doing? You're taking God's greatest creation, a milkshake, and you're moving away by adding a successive... You're taking away the good things or you're putrefying them by adding... I mean, here we go. It's a milkshake. Now let's add mulled wine?
Well, you're going back in time. Gross. Is what you're doing.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. A time when ice cream didn't exist. A time when vanilla and chocolate had not yet been... brought back from Madagascar and Mexico, respectively. Mm-hmm. And that's what... Eggnog's kind of a fossil beverage.
Like an egg cream, like a thing from before...
Yeah, like a coelacanth.
Wow, okay.
It's still alive, but it has not evolved that much.
It can breathe air, but it can't walk on land.
By the way, we all started... In the group chat, we all started roasting my son for the year. He really pushed for us to have a goose instead of ham. Mm. And we all had goose. Mm. And we see why maybe...
That's a big mistake.
We see why goose has gone out of style.
No, the only way you should have a goose is in a turgoose ducken.
Is there a turducken with a goose inserted?
Oh, I should do an episode on that. There's the big turducken.
How have we not done turduckens? Maybe we did. No, we did for deep fried turkeys.
The biggest one of those turduckens is like a lark stuffed inside a thrush, stuffed inside a quail, stuffed inside a partridge, stuffed inside a woodcock, something that ends up getting put into a duck, into a chicken, into a goose, into a turkey. It's like got
every bird in order.
Yeah, it's like every kind of bird starting at the smallest. It's absolutely an abomination against God, but it is a...
Well, it seems hard to serve.
Well, I guess you have to take the bones out.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You can't have 12 bird skeletons in there in various layers.
No, but so then you've just got like a meatball the size of like a rainbow meatball the size of a turkey.
It all kind of tastes like bird.
Greasy bird, and you have to slice it, I guess, against the grain. I mean, I have no idea how everybody gets a tiny, tiny piece of a thrush in their meal.
Dylan got very angry and said, the goose was good and you guys are all spoil sports.
Was the goose good, though?
It was kind of greasy.
Yeah, they're greasy.
It's fine. It was fun in a Dickensian way, and to get back at all the geese that have ever hissed at you in your life or pooped on your Seattle beach.
Please, sir, may I have another?
Whack.
Seattle, geese are a plague.
Yeah.
As I think they are in, well, all of the Northwest. They are all from Canada, right?
Just like all the plagues we get here, they all come down. Fire, smoke, Blue Jays fans, geese.
Blue Jays fans come down and poop on all the grass in Seattle.
And my dog eats the goose poop. It's the worst. We have recently started, Mindy reminds me, we've recently started a new Christmas dinner tradition I kind of like, which is a beef Wellington.
Oh, those are good.
They yeah. are. And they're kind of like Welsh rarebit in that when else are you going to have a beef Wellington unless it's 1954.
But the problem is that Mindy is a really diligent and good cook of foods. And a beef Wellington is one where you have to really be good because a bad beef Wellington is bad.
And you have to be willing to spend all day.
Yes.
You know, chopping up mushrooms into the duzel and Dylan loves this. So like they've often been had a little holiday cooking class.
But this is a thing where Mindy and Dylan will sit and make
beef Wellington.
Make dinner. Oh, isn't that sweet?
And I reap the benefits without having to chop a single mushroom.
Yeah.
But to get back to your line of questioning about why eggnog is worse than milkshakes, it's just because milkshakes hadn't been invented yet. In the Middle Ages, the English had a holiday drink.
Did you just call them the Middle Ages? Because I like that a lot.
The Middle Ages.
In the Middle Ages.
They're kind of middle-y. The English drank something called posset, which was a cream and sugar and egg-based drink to which you would add either beer or wine. And when you add beer or especially wine, I think, to a dairy mixture and then heat it, which you would you'd boil it over a low fire, the point is to curdle it.
So we should say at this point that we both recognize that the English are the worst thing right. that ever happened to the world.
So when you think about how bad eggnog is, think how worse it could be if we were still drinking posset. The old recipes helpfully advise you that at some point in the boiling process, quote, it will become like a cheese, which is always what I look for in a holiday beverage.
Is this like a cheese? What I like to ask.
Do you like to go out to, I mean, neither you nor I drink, but can you imagine at cocktail hour going up to a bartender and saying, what can you get me that's
we're going to
become
like
a cheese?
Like an Indonesian restaurant. Do you have anything that become like a cheese?
I want a craft cocktail that become like a cheese. Also, weirdly, they would often thicken it with just by putting in biscuit crumbs or oatmeal or something. So it would almost be a dessert / beverage.
If you think of biscuit crumbs as being something that makes a thing into a dessert.
Which you would in the year 1280.
This has become like a cheese, but it's not very good.
Once a year,
add biscuit crumbs.
Mother allows us biscuit crumbs. So it kind of has a crumble. Like I'm imagining streusel has not been invented yet.
All English food sounds like a punishment to me.
It is.
Even now.
Because if you're living in England, you are used to the idea that you don't deserve nice things.
I love a deluxe English breakfast. Because I like my food to be 17 different colors of uniform gray. Like, it's just variations of brown gray. But the problem is that the English breakfast is also seasoned with enough salt to pickle you.
Yeah.
And so I love it, but I wish it were made by Mindy, basically.
Until they brutally conquered and colonized Asia and Africa, salt was all they had.
Mm.
Salt equals taste.
Delicious.
Until they discover
cardamom,
the beautiful spices of the tropics. So posset was drunk for hundreds of years. In Macbeth, Lady Macbeth gives drugged posset to King Duncan's guards before her husband goes in and kills them.
Sure, you don't have to tell me.
Yeah, as you know all about the famous fatal posset in Act Two.
Yes, Act Two's posset. We talk about it a lot around here.
But it came to have festive connotations. Again, it's a cold weather drink. but it was something that you would put for your fanciest ingredients. And, you know, monks, you know, eggs were not cheap back then in the biscuit crumb era.
Is that a joke? Cheap.
They were cheap. They were from cheap. Birds that said cheap. And then you put it all inside a turkey. Like monks would put figs in their posset. You know, you'd put something fancy like sherry in your... So it became...
All of these sound like elaborate insults. Like, how do you put figs in your posset?
Can't you cast your mind back in time and be like, okay, it would be fancy to have a fig in my drink.
No, I see.
You and I saying. Don't want a fig in our drink. That's fine.
No. But I was from Wales. All we did was we put pebbles in our rum.
But these are the nice... Once a year, you have a little sherry or fig and you're happy.
Yeah, I suppose.
So you often, you know, toasts would be raised... to the master of the feast or the lord of the manor using this festive celebratory posset. Now, things get better, as they always do, when America enters the picture.
Here.
America is able to improve on posset.
By making milkshakes.
But there's an intermediate step, unfortunately, which is a nog. Because here in America, we have a great blessing that they do not have in Europe, which is cheap rum.
Oh, right. That was our whole business for a while there, yes. Cheap rum.
Unfortunately, like slaves are one leg of that business.
Yep, so as is often the case.
Best perhaps not to romanticize anything about this trade, but it
sugar really moves around the world as a caustic element in almost every story.
Yeah.
Hey, how did sugar play into this? Badly.
Don't ask. You don't want to ask. Sugar and rum are cheaper here than there and not taxed, because unlike other alcoholic beverages that are coming from the crown, like our beer and our wine and our ciders, the king can't really put exorbitant taxes on rum. It's coming from right next door in the Caribbean.
Right.
So rum is a weirdly accessible drink here, and despite your terrible nog palate, rum's really good in these kind of spiced winter drinks.
I went through a rum phase as a drinker, and I have to say, it was great. I mean—
No regrets.
You know, gin is bad for your mind, and vodka is terrible.
Rum conveys piracy.
It does.
It conveys beaches.
Yes, it's a sunny drink. It's a drink that mixes well with soda pop. It's a kind of fun. I think of my rum days as fun days.
If I drank, I would only drink spirits that you could put in Coca-Cola without the bartender screwing up their face.
You're not going to want to put gin in Coca-Cola.
Can I have a gin and Coke, please?
And the thing is, when someone's drunk on gin, you can actually see the anger coming off of them like steam. Whereas rum doesn't make you angry. It does make you want to it just makes like you, pirate.
It makes you want to waste away in Margaritaville. Worst case scenario.
Yes.
Probably you're drinking margaritas and Margaritaville. But, you know, that whole Jimmy Buffett life.
Yeah, my problem was I couldn't afford good rum and, you know, cheap rum. Might as well drink vodka.
So in the 1770s, we see the first attestation of the word eggnog, a version of posset made with cheap American rum. You know, it's an agrarian country with more, you know, easier to get your hands on milk and eggs, perhaps, than to your socioeconomic equivalents in Europe. It's not quite clear where nog comes from.
Like, so nog wasn't already a thing? Just like one day we say eggnog. And
nobody was making, I mean, so there are attestations of this kind of East Anglian beer called nog, nobody was saying, hey, it's the holiday. Should we have oat nog or should we have barley nog? I could use this. I could go for a cream nog or a sorghum nog right now.
Did they spell it with a silent G? Gnog?
Well, there are some thoughts that it comes from grog, which was a word for watered down rum, right? A sailor's rum ration would be his grog or her. But how many lady sailors were there then? How many non-binary sailors? Probably a lot.
Probably
they just weren't out.
We just didn't know about them.
Didn't know about their stories. Time to prioritize them. Some have speculated that nog came into fashion for this kind of holiday drink as a combination of noggin, a carved mug, which you would use to raise a delicious toast.
Were they called noggins?
Apparently, yes. You have to assume for the point of this anecdote that noggin back then was a carved mug.
Okay, sure. But a carved mug made to look like a noggin. The noggin comes from your head, or the head comes from the mug?
I wonder if the head slang comes from the mug. Because, you know, because we also say your face is your mug.
Whoa!
Did I just blow your mind? So it could have been a combination of noggin plus grog equals nog, but it's almost certainly informed by the fact that nog was already a word for beverage. And this was such a common drink in colonial times that the kitchen records of Mount Vernon include an eggnog recipe, which today is often oversold a little bit as George Washington's personal favorite eggnog. And I don't think
hard to believe
there's actually any evidence for this.
Someone in America would take a thing and turn it into a...
And say George Washington slept here. But it certainly was served in his kitchen. And his recipe, his household recipe was the following. 1/4 of cream and 1/4 of milk. Okay. 12 tablespoons of sugar.
Oh.
I'm kind of for this already. But here's where it gets crazy. 1 pint of brandy.
No.
1/2 pint of Jamaican rum. Okay, 1/2 pint of rye whiskey.
Wow.
Your favorite.
This is powerful stuff.
1/2 pint of sherry. So you get fully 2 pints of liquor in with your 1/4 of cream and 1/4 of milk. And then a dozen eggs. Stuff. The recipe says, taste frequently. And I can't tell if that's a joke or actually a helpful tip.
12 eggs. Yeah. So that's where it's gone from being like a boozy milk to a gooey thickness. Yeah, thick gooiness. And these are uncooked eggs.
And you don't want this. You're not down with the thickness.
It feels like something that Sylvester Stallone is drinking in a workout montage.
Except for all the rye.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's right.
Right. And probably not the sugar.
No.
Like, I could see him putting heavy cream and eggs together and being like, oh, I gotta make way. We're still on.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a bunch of stuff I don't want now, but I could see, but I didn't want it then either.
But given the alcoholic abundance of that recipe, I think you can see that it is kind of a license to...
Yeah, it's a punch.
Make merry, as we would say in a time before drunkenness shaming.
But I love a fruit punch. And when I drank, I loved a drinky fruit punch,
but it's not eggy. Is that the thing it's you don't want? Eggy. You don't want you don't want proteinaceous strands of things in your drinks.
Let me just say this, and this is a trigger alert for those of you listening while eating your Welsh rarebit. But booze and feeling gross and sick go hand in hand.
Right.
And when you are feeling gross and sick, you want to be thinking of like fruity light. Instead of eggy, milky,
gooey
blorg.
That's why you got to get it down quick.
Well, it's going to come back quick.
So you're never thinking about the texture of what you're downing at the same time as you're having the some of the after effects.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I was never a barfer, hardly ever barfed.
Congrats.
But I sure saw a lot of people barf. And eggnog is not what you want to see in that instance.
So all up and down the colonial coast... From Boston to New York, even down to the South, I think people are raising a merry glass of a nog of a Christmas. But now let's go upriver, 50 miles from New York City.
Okay, I can picture the scene.
To the bluffs overlooking the Hudson and to what was in the early 19th century and is still today...
West Point.
The United States Military Academy at West Point.
Yay, yes. We've arrived.
We love square things on this show, John. Mm-hmm. We love a good square meal.
I like Triscuits. I like
Triscuits.
I like square-shaped biscuits.
Remember the Mr. Men books? Weren't some of those guys
those
square?
Were square? That's right.
I think some of those dudes were square.
You know, I don't want a square book. Let's be honest. I want a book that's shaped like a book. I want a book-shaped book. That's right.
And the Mr. Men books were square.
They were square.
And that's why they were weird.
And every once in a while you go to a store, you get some sort of like coffee table book. It's square. Meh. It doesn't fit on any shelf.
I have some squares of dark chocolate that I've been eating.
I do like those.
Squares of cheese.
But you know what our favorite square is?
Origami paper. No. Squarespace, the web development company.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I love Squarespace because Squarespace loves me.
Is that right?
Uh-huh.
Is it the website design, the website all-in-one platform that loves you back?
It does because the reason I feel like it loves me is that I hate doing that stuff. I just, you know, it's maybe some combination of all of my idiosyncrasies.
Luddite-ism.
Yeah, plus attention deficit disorder and bipolar disorder and alcoholism.
Well,
and
designing a website's hard. It's a technical field.
It's the worst. But Squarespace makes it easy.
Fluid Engine means there's a drag and drop interface that lets you customize any of their templates to look exactly the way you are imagining your site.
You do not have to talk to any nerd or interact even with any nerd unless you want to.
Except for us reading this ad.
That's right.
This is the last nerd you're going to talk to.
I'm not a nerd. I'm a cool.
From now on, it's all you. And you can do anything you want on this site. They'll help you with custom merch. They'll set up an online store for you to sell your services or products. Asset Library lets you store and categorize and inventory audio or video or whatever that is.
You've got blogging. They're all optimized for mobile.
Yeah, you don't have to sell anything at all. This can just be where you engage with the world.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, that is kind of what we all imagined, that we would each have a website instead of what we are all now, which is just
social media platforms.
Just scummy sheep in a scummy sheep scrum.
They call them walled gardens. Ugh. But what if instead of walled gardens, they called them scummy sheep in a scummy sheep scrum?
Yeah.
That would catch on, right?
That's what the internet really is. But if we each had our own little plot, our own little website where we curated and made it look beautiful, and Squarespace is going to help bring about this reality.
Here's what you do. Go to squarespace.com/omnibus right now to get started. You'll get a free trial, 100% free, John. And then when you're ready to launch, you can use the offer code omnibus. And furthermore, you'll save 10% off the first website or domain you buy.
That's squarespace.com/omnibus. Use the offer code omnibus for 10% off.
The setting of our riotous story, which, by the way, was a suggestion of Krista, a Patreon supporter.
And notable pirate.
And a pirate. Mm-hmm. She suggested this show months and months and months ago, and we put her off by saying this should be the Christmas show this year because it has so much eggnog in it.
Oh, Merry Christmas. Ho, ho, ho.
Thank you for your patience, Krista. You will not receive a discount for this delay. So for the last 200 years, some things have not changed at West Point, and that includes a lot of deeply inculcated traditions. Mm-hmm. Most of them, I think, from what I can tell, when there are Senate hearings, most of them revolving around cruelty and hazing mm-hmm. of plebes mm-hmm. on the part of upperclassmen, especially the seniors who are there called firsties. Because mm-hmm. if you're military, you can say things that would sound goofy in any other setting, mm-hmm. and they'll be like, yeah. Yeah, we're firsties.
Hazing plebes.
Clean my room, make my cot.
Is a thing that has really gone out of style, but you know, I think it's integral to the United States of America,
well,
hazing plebes.
I think I have good news for you. Just if you go by the headlines of people writing, we're finally going to crack down on hazing at West Point, this has been going on every decade for 150 years. So one of these times, they're really going to crack it, I think. They're really going to get to the bottom of it.
So in 1840, they were like, the hazing at West Point is out of control.
I'm looking at 1910 headlines from the New York Times about how, like, we're finally going to face modernity and stop all the hazing of plebes at West Point.
Wow.
And then you can see the same news cycle in 2022.
Right.
And I thought there was a, because I remember the 60 Minutes in the 90s where they're like, we're not going to make the plebes walk downstairs backwards. You know, because there was a whole culture of you could make them do whatever. If you were an upperclassman, you could make them do whatever all day long. They had to clean your boots. They had to, like, you could just yell at them to recite West Point trivia at any time. They would have to rattle off 15 pages of memorized West Point history. And if they messed up one word, you could just basically have them executed, I think.
This seems like there's very little opportunity for abuse of this system.
No, and plus it's the U.S. military, so you know there's going to be constant oversight and good
That's
intentions.
Right. Well, and once you're in the Army, of course, the way the Army is run is that you just do whatever crazy thing the officer says with no accountability.
And because you know that when you're a firstie, you're going to get to do it to some other plebe.
That's right. When you're Arnold Schwarzkopf.
If you don't wash out. Did you just combine Arnold Schwarzenegger with Norman Schwarzkopf?
Norman.
Who would be the most powerful man of the early 90s?
Arnold Schwarzkopf.
He has the muscles of Arnold Schwarzenegger and the keen strategic mind of Norman Schwarzkopf.
Why was that not a Saturday Night Live skit?
He was kind of like our last...
pump you up.
He was our last Patton, MacArthur, Westmoreland-like guy. Like, the War on Terror did not produce a Schwarzkopf-like...
No, they were all too compromised by then.
Yeah, they all had mistresses. They were all Petraei.
Yeah, or they'd gone in front of the United Nations with some fake dust in a vial and lost their credibility. No, Schwarzkopf was the last one that could get down out of an airplane and make you feel like, here he is.
He was the last one to have someone play him on SNL, I bet.
Oh, okay.
Right? Because that's the marker for, like, you know, for right. when
Are
you're
you
an influence
figure?
on American discourse. So West Point has this culture of hazing and tradition. Like, I was reading MacArthur, Patton, and Eisenhower talking about their West Point hazing. In some cases, relating their trauma before Senate hearings, you know, reform hearings.
MacArthur? He seemed like the type that would always want more hazing, not less.
No, MacArthur was the one who was the most victimized. He had to do squats over broken glass until he fell unconscious. And balanced over broken glass is the time in your life when you least want to fall unconscious.
Ouch.
Patton remembered having to brace, which is to stand upright so uprightly that your jaw is pushed down into your sternum, and you would have to just do this all day with full muscle tension, including while you were eating. And apparently that's just not good for any part of you.
But can you think of two more well-adjusted Americans than Patton and MacArthur?
They turned out fine.
What the hey?
Even Eisenhower, who seems much better adjusted than either, better golf game, even he said, yeah, I just spent pretty much the entire first year at West Point at, what do you call it, double time?
Whoa.
You know, when you, you know, basically have to do everything twice as fast as the normal already brisk military pace.
Super harsh, bro.
So to this day, I think there, you know, every 10 years there's some, we'll weed this out and make it better. But West Point then still had many traditions, chief among which was the holiday party. This was especially important in the 1820s because it was really the only time these kids were going to get a drink.
Poor kids.
West Point was undergoing a big culture change. At the time of the War of 1812, West Point was just a few kind of, just a little ramshackle camp of a few cabins, three teachers, 10 cadets, and this gave America exactly the military readiness you would expect in the War of 1812, and we were actually invaded by Canadians. That's how bad our readiness was.
Can you imagine?
Canadians burned the White House because West Point sucked so much.
Oy.
And at that point,
they had to go by West Point to get there, like thumbing their nose.
But again, only 10 cadets, and they were like, let them go. So this was kind of America's wake-up call, where suddenly more military expenditure started to flow into West Point. We obviously needed a trained officer corps and a more elaborate military apparatus.
We needed both pomp and circumstance.
Exactly. We needed pomp and stance. Because at the time, like, basically anybody could get in, you know? There were no admission standards, and...
And still only 10
people. It was as popular today as... The Army, a popular career choice then as it is now.
Well, it's the paradox of it, right? The more exclusive you make it, the more people want to get in.
So Congress throws money after the War of 1812, and one Sylvanus Thayer is appointed superintendent of West Point because he is a hard ass. He's a hero of the War of 1812, and he is a real martinet who's going to brook no troublemaking or loose culture.
That's why Sylvanus is still synonymous with being a real tough taskmaster.
Like on your first day in prison, find the biggest dude named Sylvanus and kick him in the Sylvanus. So he institutes all these rules that the ramshackle camp has never had before. You know, no cooking in your rooms, no leaving campus, coming and going, no dueling. Can you imagine?
No dueling.
And the hardest one for the cadets, alcohol is effectively banned. He takes the tavern so close to West Point that was effectively part of campus and basically requisitions it and turns it into a hospital, military hospital.
There you go. Good
so man. That means now students have to sneak down the Hudson into town to find a drink, and it becomes a lot harder to do so. Now, there is a blind eye turned at Christmas. To this day, I think it's hard to get a drink at West Point. I was trying to figure this out. I think to this day, it is very hard to get a drink at West Point, largely because, you know, big part of your cadet population is underage, right?
Yeah, right. Well, and it's a much more closed campus than, say, the University of Colorado, where it's not hard to get a drink.
What do you I'm now that I have kids that age, I'm a little bit appalled. I mean, I'm a prig anyway, but I'm a little bit appalled at kind of the giggle and the blind eye we turn to just underage kids just getting blackout drunk all the time. Like, well, of course they're gonna do that.
I love that your exposure to this is when your kids are in college.
Right.
Yeah.
Because, you know, because I was always such a good kid.
Right.
It never would have occurred to me. And now I'm like, wait, parents are just like, let's get them loaded here. Then maybe they'll drive less.
Well, you know, the drinking age was 18 in a lot of American states until I was in college.
Was it 18 in Washington when you were?
No. It changed. It was
Alaska
18,
must have been, right?
No, but Idaho was 18 until I was a freshman in college. Colorado had 3-2 beer for 18-year-olds until, I don't know, now? I mean, do they still have that? I don't remember if that changed, but a lot of U.S. states had, you would drive across the border, so that was the problem with Washington State University and the University of Idaho. They're just a short drive across the border,
yeah.
Moscow and Pullman. And
the dumbest kids in Washington and the smartest kids in Idaho are so close to each other.
Oh, that's University of Washington rivalry with the Washington State University is pretty strong in this podcast because we both went to the UW.
And we care so deeply about football rivalries.
We really do. Did I tell you my mom came back from Van Wert, her hometown in Ohio. And she was there and I said, hey, find me some Van Wert stuff. Just anything that says Van Wert.
Give me some Van merch.
And she came back with a sweatshirt from Van Wert High School. Their colors are gray and burgundy, and their mascot is a cougar. And so it's a hoodie with a giant it's a purple hoodie with a giant cougar, and it has gray sleeves.
And it looks like Wazoo gear.
And then right at the bottom it says Van Wert High. And so I was wearing it to the gym, and like my friend walked over and said, how dare you, sir? What are you doing? And I was like, look, read it. It says Van Wert High. And they were like, oh, all right. All right then. But oh my God, you know? And so everywhere I went, I was getting nodded at from people that like normally, I wouldn't
normally keeping their heads down.
Wouldn't pay to change the tires on my truck.
In fact, that's who it was. And it was all the towel boys at the gym are like,
hey man,
you went to Wazoo like
Wazoo.
Me.
People listening to the show are mad right
objectively,
now.
Let's just say, objectively, burgundy and gray are much better colors than purple and gold.
That's the problem.
Nobody looks good in purple and gold.
Being a University of Washington graduate and wanting to support the school by wearing garb, you're at a real disadvantage because it all looks terrible.
Gold is yellow. Let's call it what it is. And there's a reason why most people don't look for purple and yellow together in their ensemble.
No, I don't want it. But so...
Ding.
Ding.
Accident. Inadvertent ding.
So what you were saying at some point in this show before this was what?
Oh, I think I was, how out to lunch am I? How out of step am I with the current culture that I kind of think I'm kind of a little bit appalled at the boys will be boys approach to troubled drinking?
I don't know because I see Generation Z keeps coming out in the newspaper saying like, we don't want to see any sex in movies. Yeah. We don't want to,
we're the new Puritans.
We don't want to get driver's licenses. Like your kids don't want driver's licenses. I was at a party the other day where there were teens in as part of the conversation. None of them wanted driver's licenses.
You don't need driver's licenses to see your friends anymore. They're all in the group chat.
And so it's like no driver's licenses, no sex in movies. Are they also not drinking? Well, how would they? I mean, you're sitting at home looking at your phone. So how drunk are you?
My experience is they are drinking.
Are they?
Like that's the one carve out.
Oh, wow.
They're drinking and vaping. Like they're not everything is getting better.
Oh my God. Vaping. Ugh.
No, it's good. Like
really against it.
Every time somebody smokes, I'm like, I wish that smelled like raspberry chemicals.
Oh.
And then now
it
does.
How often do you encounter someone smoking? It has to be once a year you see someone smoking from across the street.
In Seattle, you smell smoke all the time, just not tobacco smoke.
Yeah, it's weed.
So I think nowadays it's hard to get a drink at West Point. But after Sylvanus Thayer takes over in the 1820s, he effectively makes it impossible, but he has not yet banned drinking at the holiday party. That's kind of the one night when the kids can cut loose. But as the fall of 1826 draws to a close, imagine the beautiful leaf peeping going on in the Hudson River Valley. Take your mind back.
The fall of 1826.
Where were you, John? Were you maple sugaring in upstate New York in December of 1826?
Well, you know, at the time I was the captain of the Amistad, and we were...
in a past life.
No, 1826, I was working in a apple orchard in Maine.
Sylvanus Thayer has the gall to announce that this year the West Point no drinking policy will
extend to Christmas?
To the Christmas party.
What are you going? How are you going to manage to choke down your thrush stuffed into a partridge?
there's really not a lot to look forward to in the West Point calendar. I think this hits a lot of the students' heart. Let's introduce the one, you know, the one of the rioters who is a household name. Let's meet Jefferson Davis, class of 1828.
He's not the hero of this story. Please tell me.
He is not the hero of the story. Okay. But, you know, we will see kind of history hinging on this particular moment. He is the first West Point student ever arrested at Benny Haven's Tavern. Now that Sylvanus Thayer has closed down the nearby bar, this is the only place in, you know, in a 10-mile radius where a student can buy a drink, and they can do it on barter. They can bring in boots, blankets, they can bring in their own possessions.
Oh my God.
And get a beer or a cider.
They can trade their Purple Heart for a shot.
The tavern rule is you cannot trade material. You can't trade any army uniform.
Oh, okay.
So you can't come in with a cap or something and be like, I really need a drink.
I see.
But you know, if it seems like something you've bought with your own money, a pair of shoes, a pillow, you might get a drink.
And this was good for young cadets who wouldn't have money.
Right.
Their parents would have bought them boots.
Yeah, but they don't have a lot of pocket change, because what are you going to buy there? It's like being in jail. So routinely, some of these bad seeds like Jefferson Davis are sneaking into town.
Was he considered like a hip young guy, Jefferson Davis? Was he one of the cool kids?
He seems like a party animal. Like, not only is he the first cadet ever arrested for frequenting this tavern, he also at one point got so drunk he fell into a 60-foot ravine.
Whoa, what a rager. Jeff Davis.
And I guess if you're going to fall into a 60-foot ravine, you want all your joints loosened by the effects of alcohol. So maybe he's already a smart statesman.
You know, as someone with a ravine on his property, let me just say that a 60-foot ravine...
It's not much of a ravine.
Well, and also, what does that mean? 60 feet down, across? Yeah, how steep? Like, how steep? If it's 60 feet down, but it's 1/2 mile wide, that's not much.
If you're rolling down the hill like Wesley and Buttercup in The Princess Bride, 60 feet's not going to last that long.
As you wish.
It's going to be very, you're going to be like, as, and then you're going to hit the bottom.
I mean, my ravine is 60 feet deep.
Jefferson Davis, as you might expect, knew how to party. Well, don't ever.
Measuring from the top of my chimney. Lol.
So there is some, you know, there's clearly a party atmosphere at the school. But word starts to spread among Jefferson Davis and other like-minded, hard-partying cadets that the holiday party is going to go on. It's just going to have to do so. They're going to have to do so with contraband eggnog this year.
So they're going to just spike the punch.
Yes, but where do you get the stuff to spike the punch?
Trade your boots for it down at the town.
They go down to Benny Haven's Tavern and they want a keg, and they find that, the spirits there are too expensive. Mm-hmm. So they have to cross the Hudson, presumably with muffled oar, to an even more seedier dive called Martin's on the east bank of the Hudson. And at Martin's, they are able to secure, there's two different transactions that are made. It seems to be a total of about 3 to 4 gallons of contraband booze.
So George Washington's recipe was what, 4 pints?
Yes, but that's only goes with like 2 quarts of mixer.
Right, we're having a party for the West Point cadets.
Yeah, this is a keg party, basically. So you're gonna have dozens of attendees.
2 gallons,
possibly close to 100
of skanky booze.
So they're gonna do so with the cheapest booze they could get at Martin's. They get it on their raft and try to bring it back up to West Point, only to find, as you would expect, at a U.S. military academy that.
There's a guard.
Has already been sold out once by Benedict Arnold. There is a guard at the dock. It's an enlisted man. Uh-huh. But luckily, apparently they do have some pocket money because they slip him 35 cents.
Sure.
And he turns his back and says, I don't know what you guys are bringing ashore. Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas.
Ho, 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 he said. The first instance of someone saying ho, ho, ho.
Yes, at West Point. Mm-hmm. At West Point. Mm-hmm. That's December 22nd. Christmas is still 3 days away. On Christmas Eve, Sylvanus Thayer has a festive dinner at which wine is served, by the way, double standard.
Sure, sure.
For his officers.
Fancy men.
And he dispatches two officers, Captain Ethan Allen Hitchcock.
Ethan Allen? The Ethan Allen. He's named after Ethan Allen.
But it's funny because he's doing so like he might have been born very close to Ethan Allen's lifetime. Ethan Allen maybe probably lived to the early 19th century, right?
Yeah.
So you're naming him. It would be like today naming somebody
Donald Trump.
Barack Obama something or Donald Trump something. Yeah. Ethan Allen.
You think there aren't 100,000 little boys in Georgia named Donald Trump something?
Oh, I'm wrong. Ethan Allen did not survive the,
the war?
He survived the war, but he died in 1789.
Oh.
Like he did not, he probably did not vote for George Washington.
So it would, it'd be reasonable. It'd be like naming your kid Norman Schwarzkopf, Jennings.
as we all know, is extremely common. I named my kids David and Petraeus. So Ethan Allen Hitchcock and Lieutenant William A. Thornton are the ones normally in charge of the of that particular barracks, and they are left in charge of the North Barracks. And at midnight, when they go to bed, they are relieved to see that all is quiet, and they presume that not a creature is stirring, not even a mouse.
Think of the bell. Dong. Dong.
Is there a town crier, do you think,
dong,
at West Point?
No.
Calling the hours?
Dong. Little do they know, though.
One of the morning, and all's well.
Yeah, it might be that.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's not, no, a, it's not a Navy, it's not a Navy, it's not a Navy academy.
They do something in the Army.
It can't be a... it's not a bugle.
No, they...
Some guy blows the bugle every hour, every night.
One guy squeezes a thrush, and another guy squeezes a partridge, and it's like... Bah,
bah. Classic Army.
Arr.
But... By 4 a.m., Captain Hitchcock and Lieutenant Thornton are awoken to what appears to be much stomping and merriment going on upstairs.
Okay. What time?
It's 4 a.m. now.
Oh, so.
4 of the clock. So I don't know. What? Reveille's probably just 2 hours away, right?
5:30.
Maybe at Christmas, do they get to sleep in?
I bet they do.
I don't know.
You know, it's. I think of it as being very cold at West Point on Christmas Eve.
I would assume.
And so you might just think, oh, they're stomping their feet to keep from dying.
1826 isn't like Little Ice Age time or whatever, right? Like
no,
that,
but it's like Hudson River Valley, brick buildings. It can't have been.
And I think I think that's right, that the early, the late colonial and early American period are...
El Nino.
Unseasonably cold Westerosi kind of winter. El Nino, basically. And they head upstairs. So Hitchcock and Thornton head upstairs only to find that multiple bedrooms have parties going on. They shut down the first one. The second one is even wilder. And in the third one, there are cadets. Cadets have heard them coming, and one cadet has pulled his hat down over his head like a mask and refuses to take it off to reveal his identity. When Thornton and Hitchcock order everyone back to bed and lights out, the cadets there are not having it. One of them says to the other, "Get your dirks and bayonets and pistols if you have them. Before this night is over, Hitchcock will be dead."
Whoa.
So the riot starts off in...
Brian, your father was a Roman!
They go straight to 90 here. Like, they accelerates very quickly to threatening a superior officer, and in fact, a United States Army captain, with death at bayonet point or by pistol fire. And Hitchcock and Thornton head back downstairs, not knowing that this, rebellion is fomenting upstairs, and so soon... an even rowdier party has begun. So Hitchcock heads back downstairs, but it's not long before an even rowdier party begins on the lower level.
How many cadets are at West Point at this point?
260 cadets at West Point. Okay. There's a couple different barracks, and these events, I think, are combined just to the North Barracks. But
so the South Barracks is for all the nooges and
all the nerds,
giddy boys.
But this is this is over 100.
Okay.
Kids are involved here, and things are getting even rowdier again, and Hitchcock, Jefferson Davis, seeing that Hitchcock is on the warpath, runs into the room where the revelry is taking place and says, "Put away the grog, boys. Captain Hitchcock's coming." Unfortunately, Davis is in his cups and has arrived at the room just after, not before, Captain Hitchcock. So Hitchcock is standing in the doorway right ahead of him as he's saying, "Hitchcock's come." Captain Hitchcock orders Davis back to his room and says, "Go to bed," and changing the course of American history. Jefferson Davis actually complies.
Wow.
I mean,
what if we'd throw him in the river?
Hey, if there's one thing Jefferson Davis is good at, it's surrendering.
Ha ha. What if he'd been expelled?
Yeah. Like, as we'll see, there are court martials looming here. Yeah. And Jefferson Davis, after having been one of the worst drunkards in the barracks, actually turning on his tail and heading back to his room and going to bed at 4:30 a.m. is what saves his military career.
Oh, no kidding.
Perhaps changing the course of the Mexican-American War. Who knows? I mean, obviously, I mean, the Civil War is probably baked in by the 1860s, no matter whether Jefferson Davis is in Congress or not.
I would say.
But somebody else would have been the would have been its only president.
Well, and what so there were other cadets that were like, ha ha, screw you. Jefferson Davis slinks off, but there are other cadets that are defiant.
Yes, because there's only two officers trying to break this whole thing up. And here you have just dozens and dozens of cadets who are extremely drunk and no longer have whatever military sense of decorum and repression that keeps you from lashing out at the officers you resent.
Right. So I mean, they will know you. Like, they're going to recognize you.
Yeah, you can't keep your hat on your mask like that one guy in his cot. So, but I think they just feel like they have strength of numbers and they've had enough eggnog that they don't care. So powered by eggnog, they begin threatening Thornton and Hitchcock with swords, chucking pieces of wood at their heads. Thornton is actually knocked down by a part of a piece of firewood coming at his head. Hitchcock is trying to break his way down a barricaded door to get to one party. And a cadet actually pulls out a pistol and tries to shoot an army captain. And it's only because another cadet accidentally jostles him that his aim goes awry and the bullet...
He fires!
He fires and the bullet goes into the door jamb of the door that Hitchcock is trying to bust open.
They're going
to
hang him on the quad.
So Hitchcock and Thornton realize that they are out of their...
It's a mutiny.
...element. A literal eggnog mutiny is going on. And they are not ready for this. So they find a relief sentinel and say, you need to bring the commandant in here. That would be at the time William Worth is the commandant of cadets. That's a West Point officer that serves directly under the superintendent. And they may still have this office now. Basically, he oversees student life and is designed to be a model cadet.
Mm-hmm.
He's a
cadet age.
No, he's an officer. In fact, William Worth is, let's see, at this point, he is a first lieutenant, I think, from the War of 1812. So he's an officer serving under the superintendent, but he's the point of contact for all the students, and he's supposed to embody all their West Point virtues and spirit. But they misunderstand the call to get the commandant of cadets. And for whatever reason, they think that Hitchcock and Thornton are calling for the bombardiers.
Oh.
Because West Point is not just a military academy. At the time, it's also a regular army installation.
But a bombardier doesn't mean a fireman?
No, an artilleryman. Some artillery regiment is also headquartered at West Point.
Okay.
And the cadets resent the bombardiers artillerymen who have actual military status rank, and rank, and they get all the good treatment while the cadets are going through whatever their demeaning hazing and rough life is.
So through some miscommunication, it seems like he's calling for the regular army.
They think the army has been called in because there are barracks full of artillerymen a few yards away. And so they decide they need to barricade their whole barracks Les Miserables style.
Wow.
And so they start throwing plates and smashing crockery, breaking windows, throwing stuff out the windows, smashing the furniture. You know, it turns into full-scale bedlam. Now, the artillerymen, of course, have not been called and do not come, but Commandant of Cadets William Worth does arrive on the scene. And I have to imagine, apparently the riot is immediately diffused, and I have to imagine in any kind of mob situation like that, there's a moment where even the mob members realize it's out of hand and gone too far, and you just need some hinge, some excuse to turn the tide of the room.
Uh-huh.
And in this case, it's First Lieutenant William Worth showing up, and apparently everybody just realizes, oh, what have we done? and slinks back to bed. The eggnog riot is over. But the consequences linger on because, as you're saying, a full-scale mutiny has just happened in, you know, what's supposed to be the cradle of America's great new military readiness.
Well, and I mean, as you say, Jefferson Davis lived to fight another day. But think about all the, these are who would be the officers during the Civil War.
That is the generation of that, yeah.
So what happened to them?
Well, court martials are held. It's decided that there are about 90 cadets of the 260, roughly a third of West Point, actually clearly committed acts that could get them indicted at court martial. So it would really cripple the entire academy. Now, people have flunked out of West Point before. There are famous cases like Edgar Allan Poe flunks out of West Point because he just doesn't want to be there. I guess James McNeil Whistler, the painter, the Whistler's mother painter, had an unsuccessful run at West Point. And once he became successful, he would often joke that it was a chemistry test that had flunked him out. He often joked that, if silicon were a gas, I'd be a major general now.
This is Whistler talking to a bunch of other painters. When is Whistler addressing a group of people saying,
he's in a tavern.
Oh, I see.
He's,
gather round.
This is one of his hail fellow well-met kind of stories. If silicon were a gas, I'd be a major general, because it was just one chemistry test that ended his career and
that's pretty good.
And gave the world a painter. That is good,
anecdote,
right?
Yeah.
In the 20th century, did you know Timothy Leary was at West Point?
No.
Very unsuccessful West Point plebe. He spent most of his year and a half there in various kinds of solitary confinement whatever they call that there.
Solitary confinement.
I think there's a West Pointian name for it that escapes me. But
in the hole.
He spent most of his time there without privileges. He took advantage of the time to read up on Buddhism and other Eastern religions.
Hippie.
So it's possible that the whole counterculture never happens if Timothy Leary doesn't get cracked down on at West
Point. About all the alternate futures that are, like
branching off.
Even
here.
Right now, someone is in detention at West Point and it's like, well, that could have averted the war. I'm not a chemist, but if silicon were a gas, what else would be
there?
There'd
be other problems with life on Earth.
Right. There would be stuff going on.
Silicon is the most common ingredient, is the most common element in the Earth's crust. Is that right?
Is that right? So if it maybe were after a gas, oxygen.
Maybe after oxygen.
That would change a lot.
Yes. No quartz.
Uh-huh.
No sand.
Uh-uh.
What do you do without sand?
Yeah, right.
What do you make cement out of?
Nothing. What do you make glass out of? Our houses would have no windows.
Or cement. Or foundations. So the decision is made by Thayer, deeming it militarily and politically inadvisable to court-martial fully 90 West Point cadets. He picks the 19 worst offenders. And I think this often happens in such situations.
Yeah. Like, that's why I was in trouble all the time. It was like, well, somebody's got to get prosecuted.
And clearly you're above the line.
Let's do the loud kid.
This is a January 6th kind of situation where, you know, a lot of people are going to get away with it, but 19 people are going to face court martials. And in fact, this goes up so high. I mean, just to show you the kind of one horse town America is in 1826, after these 19 officers are court martialed, the results actually go up to no less than President John Quincy Adams, who decides to stay or suspend or alter some of the sentences.
He's the commander-in-chief.
He's the commander-in-chief, but I really can't imagine the president doing that today after an eggnog party got out of control.
And so he went down the list and he was like, this kid comes from a good family. Let's let him
off. Yeah, exactly. This kid's dad is a important tea merchant.
Yeah.
So, but this is a big black eye on West Point and on the U.S. military in general. So this is not just this is big military news. If Stars and Stripes existed, this would be all over the front pages for months. And in fact, it kind of leads to some changes at West Point. You know, the Sylvanus Thayer style discipline is ramped up a notch.
Oh, it's ramped up. They don't say like, we should let the kids drink.
No, it's absolutely like, no, this is a military culture and we're not going to wink at this kind of stuff at all. In the 1840s, they actually tore down the barracks of this era and built a new facility. And even though eggnog riots were now 15 to 20 years in the past. They actually designed the new barracks with crowd control in mind. You can no longer pass directly between the floors without going through a series of hallways, such that in the future, it would be much easier for a small group of officers to contain a large group of eggnog drinking revelers.
In contrast, of course, major American universities all paved their big quads so that they would be more easily able to control crowds with fire hoses.
Right, exactly. Yeah, they learned from the 60s.
Yeah, it's like, no, we're not going to try to contain a small group of students. We're going to be able to, we're going to try and like really hose down a large group of protesters.
And you need ways to get smoke bombs into the administration buildings.
Right.
There's a lot of stuff to think about.
So
as you point out, there's a lot of different ways that history branches here. What if Jefferson Davis had decided to throw a punch instead of slinking back to his room? Somebody else would probably be president of the Confederacy 35 years later.
Who was next in line to be president of the Confederacy? That's a good like history paper.
Well, we know it can't be Preston Brooks. We learned in the last entry that he had already died.
Right. So,
well, the vice president was one Alexander Stevens of is it a border state? Is it like Tennessee?
Yeah, but did
Georgia?
Did he have the oomph to be the head boy?
Maybe they get John Tyler. I wonder if anybody thought about offering it to John Tyler. He served in the Confederate Senate, right? He served in Congress.
John Tyler's a great option. Yeah.
Let's
just go with that alternate future.
Be a great trivia question in that alternate universe. But here's one other alternate future that hinges on this moment. There is at this point another, as you alluded to earlier, another Southern soldier at West Point who does not, you know, being such a, I don't want to say goody two-shoes, but such a strong sense of personal and family honor and dignity that he is not whooping it up with the middle-class kids at the eggnog riots.
Okay.
A young Robert E. Lee.
Sure, there he is.
Puts in his earplugs and says his prayers and goes to sleep. And I don't think there's any evidence of him.
Sleeps through the whole thing.
He doesn't have a sip of eggnog. The only time I can find him mentioned in the story is 2 days before the riot, the day between the acquisition of the contraband rum and the Christmas Eve merrymaking. We know that Robert E. Lee actually sought a meeting with Sylvanus Thayer, the superintendent, but not to rat or anything.
Good.
He had a question about trigonometry from an artillery course he was taking.
Nerd,
right? So we know Robert E. Lee's a total grind, just working on sines and cosines, while Jefferson, and that's what changes history. Because imagine a world where Robert E. Lee thinks, you know what, I would like to have a drink of eggnog with the boys. I don't know why he's talking like an old man, even though he's 20. Yeah, I
mean, he's one of those, you know, he's an old soul.
He comes from an old Virginia family. He doesn't have dentures. But if he gets up and has a drink and, you know, ends up breaking a plate over a lieutenant's head.
Or if he went to Jefferson Davis and said, hey, why don't you help me with this calculus instead of...
Yes, exactly. What if he'd been a better influence?
Well, now think about the relationship between Jefferson Davis and Robert E. Lee during the war.
Schoolmates. West Point
not
classmates.
Not just schoolmates, but the president's like a bad boy. And Robert E. Lee's a grind. That's not how you think about him.
It's the equivalent of, Judd Nelson or Emilio Estevez becomes president of the United States and wants Anthony Michael Hall to run the CIA or something.
Do we say Emilio Estevez?
Estevez.
Emilio Estevez.
I feel like neither would raise my eyebrows, but I think it actually does have the
Estevez. Well, anyway.
No accent, I think.
That's neither here nor there, but I imagine
Estevez.
It's always interesting to think of like Robert E. Lee and Jefferson Davis like standing in the anteroom somewhere someone's about to step on stage and give a speech about, you know, states' rights or whatever, and just what they would say to each other, like little asides, like nerd, you know, like loser.
I wonder if it's still army stuff.
Oh,
you know, because they're bound by, even though we think of them as Confederates, you know, for most of their military career, they were American veterans.
Yeah.
Are they reminiscing about the Mexican War?
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe just, I don't know. Who knows what military people say to one another?
See, that's what I don't know.
In the privacy of their quiet time.
That's what, especially in the 1840s or 50s, let's say. What are they talking about? Probably booze.
Yeah, right. booze and trajectories.
They're just talking about eggnog and trigonometry. Well, happy Christmas, John.
Happy Christmas, Yoko. And that concludes the Eggnog Riot. Entry 398.RO1313. Certificate number 32683 in the omnibus. Futurelings, social media
makes you sigh.
Is really dark. You know, I've started going to, what is it? What's the one that's connected to Instagram?
Threads?
I've started going
there.
Don't
do it.
Because Instagram is directing me there. I don't want to be there, but I've posted a few things on there. And it does have that same feeling that we used to get. It's not the same. It's drastically different. But it's, you feel people really thirsty there for it to be like the old days. People really trying hard to like have it be good and fun. But the writing's on the wall. It's just a funeral. It's just like that funeral scene in The Sixth Sense before the videotape plays. Dark times.
I don't know what you're talking about. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So, the ghost under the bed?
The ghost under the bed, yeah.
Okay, I'm with you.
But you can still, if you're out there, and you're like, no, social media is still amazing. I'm a young person. Please don't let the best days be behind us. I'm sorry. If you are a young person who doesn't have a driver's license and who doesn't want to see sex in movies, you can't also have social media be fun.
You don't get everything.
No, you're living in.
You get phones, the bad so you times. Don't get a functioning America, but you do get a phone.
You do have a phone, unless you are my child, in which case you're not even.
You don't get either. You don't get either. What is your child's consolation prize?
Oh my God!
For the rising seas.
I was at a restaurant last night, and there was a teen, with their father, and the dad was probably your age, and he was looking at his phone. And the teen had black, greasy hair. And the teen's body language was like they were looking at their phone under the table. And they were like crouched in the corner of the booth like they were being flogged. You know, just like so with hair over the eyes. And the dad was just sitting looking at his phone. And the kid was crouched down, phone under the table. And it just looked so awful. And I was sitting next to my sister. And I was like, oh my God, look at this over here. Like. How hurt, I'm like hurt just looking at the relationship between these two. And they're close enough to go out to dinner with one another. And I looked over at my daughter and said, never, you're never getting a phone. By the time you can afford a phone, there won't be phones.
Except her bitterness over not getting a phone is going to lead to her cowering and resentment.
Yeah, but I don't allow cowering and resentment. You've seen it here. What happens when you cower and resent? You don't get away with it, do you?
You take my phone.
I do.
You confiscate it.
You can email us with your feelings. Whew. And hopefully Mindy will read them and not send them on to me.
You always say Mindy. I don't think she reads any of the mail.
I mean you. When I say Mindy, I mean you. I mean your better half. Email us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. You can mail us things, actually physically mail us things, which we prefer, at P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155. We know from the last episode that Ken does not have a cloak.
I don't own a cape of any kind.
He needs some kind of cape or cloak. So if you have an extra that's in size medium, send it on to Ken.
Are cloaks sized?
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, if you're going to give my daughter a cloak and me a cloak, they better not be the same size.
Keep in mind, I only wear Valentino.
You can hang out with other futurelings by Googling futureling and clicking on whatever result meets your needs.
Do whatever the internet tells you at that point.
What happens if you just Google futureling?
You have done this
before. Futureling. It's been a while.
What happens now?
Oh, wow. the first thing that comes up is a Cotton Bureau ad for an Omnibus t-shirt.
Yay.
And then...
search engine optimization works.
Oh, well, here's the problem. Then the next thing is something called Future Link.
Oh, it's Google. It's Google Fuzzy Search.
Google's like...
it's getting in the way.
Do you mean this thing we don't mean? Future
Link?
And then Reddit is the third. Reddit is the third.
Is it a Omnibus subreddit?
Yes.
Yeah.
Multiple subreddits there. And then the fourth thing is hashtag FutureLink on Instagram. Let's see what happens if you go to the hashtag FutureLinks of Instagram. Hashtag FutureLink has 7 posts. One of them is of a guy holding up his child, and the child's trying to put a basketball in a basketball hoop.
That really sums up the ethos of Omnibus.
So that's not related. And then one of them is of a box with a padlock on it. And I don't think that's related to us either. So hashtag FutureLink on Instagram does not have a ton of Omnibus-related content. So please, if you're going to do something, go on there and change that. If you change nothing else in your life.
If you change nothing else about society, upload better images.
And then also on your way to doing that, go to patreon.com/omnibusproject and support the show.
Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come, but if the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word. Wouldn't that be weird if we just ended with eggnog?
Zoop. Eggnog.
But if providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.